Welcome back to the Low IQ podcast.
Welcome back.
Hi.
Hello. I am Jack and we are back.
And right. Who, Jack, have we got?
Well, I want to introduce this episode by saying that the Low IQ podcast is no longer the Low IQ podcast today.
In fact, yeah, we're not. So all these previous episodes, we've had Harry on. He's dumb as
a doorknob.
A doorknob, yeah. We're going to keep it PG in the first minute. Otherwise, you get demonetized. But really, what I'd say is he's dumb as but now...
Why say that and then say...
But now,
ridiculous.
We have the highest IQ in the world on Dr. Karan Rajan.
Unofficial record. Thank you very much.
How are you doing?
How are you?
Good. So, explain yourself.
Who are you?
Explain myself.
Explain yourself.
Who am I? It's like that nod, you know, Nardwuar when he's like, who are you? Yeah. I am Karan, also known as Dr. Karan on social media. I'm a surgeon. I gut people legally with consent. And I make videos online about health, science, medicine.
You gut people?
Yeah, I literally deal with their guts. I mean, I cut them open, sometimes take out their guts, sometimes remove a section of gut or any other organ that's bad or that's going wrong. And then I...
That's actually mad. I didn't know you were a surgeon.
Yeah.
I thought you were just like a...
You didn't do your research.
Well, no, he's a doctor. I thought he's a doctor.
Well, that's what doctors do.
No, a doctor and a surgeon's different, isn't it?
So all surgeons are doctors, but then to be a surgeon, you have to do extra surgical exams to be able to practice surgery and do surgery and do your own surgical training. So,
With that doctor title,
so
you can put that on like a letter, right? You can be like, doctor.
I'm Dr. Karan.
Yeah, all those online forms when I'm booking flights for, you know, going across a different country. You know, sometimes you can put Dr., Miss, Lord, whatever. Doctor.
Let me I'd tell you Lord. Something. I am a Lord.
Are you?
I'm Lord Jack Joseph.
Did you buy it from one of those Chinese websites?
Yeah. Why the hell? Who do you think you are, mate?
No, I own a 1 meter by 1 meter plot of land in a Scottish countryside.
Sorry, 1 meter's worth.
Yeah, so about
a
this.
Square.
A square meter.
So there's like 10,000 people who also own 1 by 1.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, sorry.
But I'm technically a lord. I'm Lord Jack Joseph to you.
How much was his land?
It's tenner. Something like that.
Do you know where it is?
Scotland, yeah. I've got the coordinates and everything.
Have you been there? You could stand in there and be like...
Oh. I could make my own laws in that fucker.
I think this was a scam that was reported.
No, it weren't.
I think it was.
Do you know what is a scam, though? Have you seen those websites where you can name a star after yourself?
Yeah, that sounds like a scam.
But you can't do that. That's,
yeah, but that's billion, there's billions of stuff. Yeah, why do you care? Like,
yeah, I don't
I'd
know.
Never do that.
No, I don't know. It's kind of that emotional feeling you get. And you buy it, I suppose.
You can probably buy PhDs online as well.
Is that what you did?
But you know what? In the UK and in Australia, although I think that's changing, surgeons are not called doctor. They're called Mr. Whatever.
Oh,
so
what?
I'm at work in the hospital. I'm called Mr. Karan because it goes back to like medieval surgeons who were actually barbers and butchers.
What?
And they were just misters. They weren't, because back then surgery was seen as like this dirty thing dealing with blood and whatever. Mm. So it was like the priests and the monks who were the physicians, the doctors. And it was the barbers and butchers who did amputations, tooth extractions.
Lobotomy.
Abscesses.
Lobotomy. Yeah.
And it was only after Henry VIII and beyond that it became actually, no, we need surgeons. We need to make them doctors as part of the club as well.
Mm.
It's carried on that tradition of calling them misters, carried on to this day.
Do you think there's any truth in what the fuck you've just said? I'm joking. I'm joking. It's just that joke comes to my head. No, what I was going to say was, do you think there's any truth? You know, back in the time where they used to open their head up and they used to... jab their brain.
Lobotomy.
Yeah.
Right, let me explain this because I watched a TikTok on this, so I know my facts. So what they do, there's a bit of soft tissue behind your eye, right? Wrong. Okay, the way you're looking at me suggests wrong. No, wait, let me try and explain.
Okay, yeah,
so they get a big fucking needle.
Yeah.
They poke it through the top of your eye and it goes into this like, they poke it through your skull and they like just jab the fuck out of your frontal cortex, right? And then it's, if you're all like manic and that, it calms you down.
So yeah, that's basically, you know, there's a lot of ways lobotomy was done. It's either through the eye. Well, the eye is basically an extension of the brain, right? The optic nerve, the nerve which supplies the eye, is part of the brain. Wow. So the eye is basically the external bit of the brain. Right? That's like a weird thing which not many people realize. So beyond the eye, they jab something to just poke one of the, you know, tissues or fissures between the two lobes of the brain, sometimes try to sever that, or they're going through the skull. And they did that to Rose Kennedy, you know, JFK's sister, because she was like an independent, outgoing woman. The father didn't like that and got her lobotomized.
So he shoved a spike in her head.
Yeah, if you see the before and after pictures of Rose Kennedy, this young, beautiful woman who's like outgoing, independent, and then after where she's like almost like a, you know, vegetative state.
Really?
What, did she get all like...
It was a proper scandal. She was properly lobotomized.
So she was like paralyzed, Stephen Hawking level?
Not that level, but... She was not paralyzed, but her complete mood, her personality was just gone.
So it worked then?
Well, it depends what you were trying to do. So that, yeah, it was it's pretty savage. And it was done up until, I want to say up until the 70s in some places.
Christ.
It's pretty bad.
Does it not happen anymore? You can't do that?
You can't lobotomize people anymore, but you can drill holes into people's skulls.
Why would you be doing that?
Why the hell?
They had a bleed in the brain and you want to, you know,
surely that was just more bleeding.
Take it out.
Did it not?
So it's like a coconut, right? If you want to get out the water from the coconut, you make a little hole in it and it comes out. That's what you do.
Then you're just exposing the coconut to rot.
What you can do though, right? You can actually take that skull, which you've taken out to decompress the brain, and put the piece of skull in your abdomen to keep it safe.
That's insane. You're putting a skull in an ab?
Between the muscle layers and the fat layers, so it's receiving the blood supply nutrition from your body.
So it's not rotting.
That is mad.
It's not rotting. And because if you leave that piece of skull outside, it will wither away and it will turn into like a piece of like cheese and just go.
Cheese?
Piece of cheese?
Yeah.
So what they do,
if someone has a skull injury and they take the flap of skull out, keep it for safekeeping in the tummy and let the brain kind of swell and expand, and they put like some sort of prosthetic cover on top, it eventually, once the brain's gone back to normal size and healed, take that piece of skull and whack it back on.
That's mad.
No.
That can't. What I don't get, right? So if Cole was here right now and I just chopped his head like that and took his skull off, he would die. But why?
Most likely, yeah.
Why does that not happen when you're performing a surgery? I don't get that.
Because you can stop the bleeding because you've got like, you know, I call it the fire stick, but it's called a diathermy, where it's like 1,000 degrees where you can spot a bleeding vessel and just fry it to stop bleeding.
But surely there's loads of bleeding vessels.
There's loads in the brain.
So you
have to be careful.
Spam it.
But also, you use anesthetic, which can stop some bleeding as well. And it's just very, very delicate microsurgery.
Do you coagulate the blood?
He's actually pointed at me. How do you do that?
You burn the vessel. You burn the vessel when it's coagulated. And
it's coagulated, mate.
Oh,
just coagulated.
That's it.
So when you're doing your surgery, right? So obviously it's very, you open the gut up.
Yeah.
Open this all up. And you're doing, do you use robots? Because I saw someone do origami, that's a surgeon, with these little pincers, but they've got their hands in robots.
So you can do what you probably saw as a viral video that went, like, you know, really viral. Popular on Ryan Reese viral. Yeah. That was laparoscopic surgery, so keyhole surgery, which is different to robotic surgery. So you got the open surgery, where you just use your hands and then you chop things with your hands.
Is that what you do?
I do all three of them.
Oh, bloody hell.
Because it depends. For different cases, you need all three. For like breast surgery, you can't do robotic breast surgery.
Oh, what? Oh, that's just an excuse. Yeah. You can't do this with robots. It's got to be real hands. It's got to be my hand.
For like for skin removal, like if you've got skin cancer, you can't do robotic surgery. It doesn't make sense. You spend more time setting up the robot than doing the operation. Laparoscopic surgery, which minimally invasive keyhole surgery, which is what we've been doing for the last 3 decades, is where you make tiny little cuts in the belly, put little, you know, rod-like instruments inside, like telescopes and stuff, and you operate with like a little pincer type
thing. I had that.
Did you?
A biopsy on my liver.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I'm experiencing.
He just always talks about his liver.
No, I'm just, it's relevant. He's talking about little biopsies.
You know, the liver can bleed like a stuck pig. It is the one thing that's...
A stunk pig?
Like a stuck pig.
Yeah. Oh, a stuck? Do they bleed a lot?
Pigs bleed a lot. I assume so. I haven't done pig surgery, but the liver, even if you just accidentally injure it, it can get quite scary to stop the bleeding.
This is what I was going to ask you, right? So you're messing about with the liver or whatever.
Yeah.
Or like these little veins or arteries. What if you sneeze?
Well, you pull away before you sneeze.
No, but sometimes you just... I sneeze and I don't even know I'm going to do it sometimes.
Does that ever happen?
So I have sneezed in surgery, but I've always had time to kind of like step away.
Sure.
Because you know when it's coming.
That's why.
I don't know. Sometimes I'm just like... Ah.
Really?
Yeah.
No. That's unusual, I would say.
He's an unusual guy.
Yeah, you might have some weird thing going on which causes you to spontaneously sneeze without any notice.
Yeah. Well, you get a bit of notice, but I don't think it's enough to... Because if I'm holding a knife in the stomach, right?
Yeah.
I don't think I've got enough... Like, how are you? And I wouldn't have enough time. I'd like drop the knife and it's...
I would say one thing, right? So think about moments when you've sneezed in your life. Have you ever been doing something so intricate and delicate where you're driving or you're cooking or something where you can kind of stop? Well, in surgery, you're so focused that it suppresses a lot of other things. The adrenaline, that fight or flight response, suppresses all the other urges, like the urge to pee, the urge to take a dump, everything.
So you don't poo when you surge?
Hopefully not, he's not taking the patient to the toilet,
some surgeries last like 20 hours, don't they?
You take it in turns. So it's marathon surgeries. So there's a recent surgery, well, not recent, but it's quite done, you know, a few times a year in the London specialist hospitals, where they have to separate, like, you know, Siamese twins, or separate twins that are joined at the skull or whatever. Those surgeries and transplant surgeries can take sometimes up to 20 hours.
That's mad.
So you have to work in teams and tag team and tag out and tag in.
How long would you be doing it?
The longest surgery I've done was 15 hours. This is when I was very junior in my surgical career and I was assisting one of my bosses. At the start of the day, it was only one surgery on the operating list. And I thought, oh, brilliant. It was my birthday as well, so we'll be done. 3 hours, go home. At 9 o'clock, we started. While I was scrubbing, he told me, he's like, I hope you've had your breakfast, lunch and dinner, because we're going to be here for a while.
Oh, no.
We finished at midnight, started at 9 a.m.
Oh, man. What was the surgery?
It's called a pelvic exenteration, where we remove the rectum, the uterus, the ovary, bladder.
Rectum, is that?
Bottom end of your...
That's your asshole.
You removed his asshole?
Yeah.
Why did you do that?
You took his asshole out.
That's like your number.
You took her asshole out.
Yeah, yeah. Oh. And we brought out a stoma, like a little poo bag.
Oh, poo bag.
Oh.
Yeah, and she had a urine bag as well.
How do you take an asshole out? Because surely the asshole is... You are your asshole.
It's a tube, right?
It's a tube, right. Yeah, it's a tube. So you block the exit off and you chop that off and you create a new exit. You create a new asshole, and that's on the skin surface.
Right. Why did you do this to this poor lady?
Because she had cancer in the rectum.
And in the urine hole.
The cancer had spread to the bladder, to the ovaries, to the uterus, so it all had to go.
Did she survive?
Yeah.
She's alive now?
I don't know. This was about 10 years ago, so I don't know.
Do they have to poo out their stomach every day of the rest of their life?
If you've got a stoma, you can have a temporary stoma or you can have like a permanent one. But yeah, a lot of people have permanent ones, so they have to change their like poo bag.
Right.
Several times a day, potentially.
So then... Wait, so you're saying you can have a temporary one, so you can reattach, you can put a new arsehole in there?
You can sometimes plumb it back together, and even worse...
Well, but he's a plumber as well.
Surgeons are basically plumbers.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. And what you can do is something called a J-pouch, where you can use a bit of intestine from somewhere else that's not affected by anything, and create a new anal reservoir, and use that as the new kind of like rectum.
That's mad. Okay. I actually know a fact... tell me if this is true. Apparently, everybody in the world has cancer, but hold on, but a little bit of cancer,
right?
But your body fights it every day, but some people just doesn't.
Yeah, that is actually somewhat true.
Come on.
In the sense that your immune system is constantly fighting viruses, bacteria that are low grade. And there may be I wouldn't say cancer, but genetic mutations, which could have the potential to develop into cancer if not picked up. Your immune system's like, fuck off.
yeah,
and wipes it out.
Do you think there is a cure for cancer?
Cool. Oh. So the thing people get wrong is that they put cancer as like an umbrella term and they think there's just one cancer, because it is an umbrella term for like thousands of different cancers. So breast cancer is wildly different on a genetic biological level to liver cancer or to, you know, head and neck cancer or whatever.
Okay.
So while we have cures for various cancers, like I can chop out a bowel cancer with surgery, that may not work just to cut out a cancer for like a blood cancer, for example. You can't remove all their blood.
Okay. And what parts of the body? So my balls can get a cancer on it.
Yeah.
My bell end.
Can your balls get cancer? Yeah.
Testicular cancer. Oh yeah, cancer as well.
But my penis.
Yeah.
Can't have cancer, no?
You can have cancer.
Piece
you can
penile
have
cancer.
Oh. Once you've seen fungating penile cancer, you've seen it all.
Oh, really? I want to see one of those. Horrible. Can we look up penile fungus cancer?
There's no point because the audience can't even see it.
Yeah, fungating penile cancer. I mean, I wouldn't advise people to look it up online, but if you must, you know, look at it.
I'm going to look that up.
It's not nice. And yeah, you'll have to get amputated.
So they got a flat knob?
They won't have, they'll be sort of essentially castrated, but you can actually do penile reconstructions now as
not
well.
Not the same.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Okay.
We can control it with a remote. Like the erections and stuff.
What? You're going to get a robot?
You can
control
your sphincter with a remote as well.
What's a sphincter?
Your anal sphincters and the reservoir I mentioned, the anal reservoir, you can actually get a remote to control the emptying of that.
The poo.
So you can get a... So it's like a little robot cock.
You can get a robocock. You can get roborectums.
Okay. So if someone gets hold of your remote control for your cock...
Oh, that's a bad day.
Then they're just pressing buttons. You're spunking everywhere.
You probably won't. It depends if you've got the vas deferens and those kind of sperm tubes still intact. Mm. So it might just be for erection purposes that you've got it.
Oh, does the remote ejaculate you?
It can give you the erection, to inflate it.
Can it squirt the spunk out?
That I don't know.
Just go deploy!
If you've got intact, the kind of spermatic tubes, potentially, yeah.
Do you know what?
Wow.
Business plan. We should make an app.
Right.
For the robocock. Imagine how useful that could be.
You know, how many people have robococks in this world, do you reckon?
In this world, I reckon very few. If I had to guess, I would say like, you know, it would be in the hundreds.
You've never given a robocock?
I've never. I'm not a urologist. So I've done urological surgery in the past. Like I've done,
vaginas? Vaginas?
I've not operated on a vagina ever. I have had to untwist someone's balls.
Oh,
circuitly.
That's bad. Yeah, I know someone that twisted their balls.
It is pretty bad.
And how, because I thought I twisted my balls once.
Yeah.
Because they hurt. Now, how do I know whether they're twisted or...
Apparently, it's like excruciating pain.
Yeah, three things to tell you that you'd know, which a lot of people don't know. One is obviously, the excruciating pain. And you can also tell by the way it's positioned, like your testicles will be like almost 90 degrees to each other. And the third thing is the cremasteric reflex. So if you or someone else strokes your inner thigh in a normal person without torsion or twisting of the testicles, your balls will lift up.
Will they?
The cremasteric reflex.
I get that though.
Yeah, then that's good. You want your balls to lift up.
Oh, I want that. Yeah.
If someone strokes your inner thigh right now, your balls as a reflex will lift up.
Oh.
But if it doesn't lift up, you might have testicular torsion.
Nice.
Yeah.
My thing, because when you ejaculate, you know, when you're climaxing, your balls suck up to you, don't they? And sometimes my balls go above my dick.
What?
Genuinely, this must happen to you.
They go inside you.
They go inside you.
That happens inside to be
current.
They will retract because of the cremasteric reflex.
Yes, no, but
what I'm saying is out of the
sack.
That's real.
Trust me, it is.
We've had multiple guests say that theirs goes outside the sack.
Mine goes outside the sack. So when I sometimes spunk, if I'm cold, my balls are retracted.
Yeah, that's...
One of my testicles will go over my dick. It's grim.
That's interesting.
It is interesting.
I'd have to go and do some research.
Yeah.
My search history is pretty filthy.
So with this robe, you said you can do all these surgeries on the penile, penis.
I don't do penile surgery, but
he's heard of them.
But you've heard of them, right? So is it, can you enlarge?
Mm.
Can you enlarge the penis? Yeah, you can. You can. You can enlarge
and,
the
and
penis.
And can a regular person, just like me and Carl, as an example?
No, just you. Just.
So, for example, there's like non-surgical methods which they talk about. It's like traction. Like you either put a weight at the end of your belt.
Jeez.
Right? I've heard about that.
That's what monks do, right? They put like a big stone.
Shaolin monks, yeah, to train their mind and body.
Is it their mind?
Or they get kicked in the balls repeatedly.
Seeing that, that can't be healthy, right?
No, that's a high risk of testicular torsion. Like the Jackass guys who used to get beaten up and kicked in the balls,
yeah,
he got testicular torsion, I think, a couple of times.
Oof.
Yeah, Steve-O. Shit. But okay. Yeah, you can. The stretching has no scientific evidence to work. You can cut this little ligament which attaches the end of your penis to your pubic bone.
Okay.
Now that will lengthen it because actually, right, around half of your penis is actually inside you that you can't see. So your damn actual it penis will be bigger than you think if you measured it. Because it's a third of it is, or more than a third of it is
I'm
inside
you. I'm going to use that one. Yeah. The rest is inside me.
So yeah.
If you've got a 4-inch penis, it's actually 8 inches anatomically.
Okay. I've got like 4 inches like in total. That's
but if you cut that little ligament which ties the end of the penis, the root of the penis to the pubic bone, it will flop out more and give you more length, but you will lose the curvature and the angle of the dangle. So it's not worth it.
I don't care about that.
Yeah, well, I don't think you want a curvature, do you?
The curvature is sometimes it's biologically there to improve the success of conception and intercourse.
Really?
Yeah, but I don't care about concepting. I just want a sex.
And also there's a risk that you could develop erectile dysfunction and erection issues. It would just be big, but you might have erection issues.
What causes that?
Erectile dysfunction could be a combination of both the physical and biological. It could be because of you're just nervous or anxious or depressed. It could be physical causes, like you've either had some trauma to there, some surgery to there, some of the nerves that supplies the penis to cause the erection might have been rogered, like during bowel surgery sometimes. During rectal surgery, we consent the patients for risk of erectile dysfunction and impotence because we're operating so low down, some of the pelvic nerves and blood vessels could be injured and that might leave the person at risk of erectile problems.
Okay. I've got a good question. Now, I've seen on TikTok again, and I know some people. In fact, my girlfriend said this. A lot of girls don't believe in the term blue balls. Now, I need some science behind this because...
I know it.
Well, my girlfriend was like, it doesn't exist. It's just a way of guys, you know, trying it on.
It does exist.
No.
It exists.
Absolutely. So my thought on this is... Tell me if I'm right, Karen.
Karen.
Okay, tell me if I'm right. Right, so you get on all stimulated when a girl is putting her leg on you and like rubbing you up and stuff, right? Being all sexy and hot, girls are very beautiful. Girls are beautiful, very beautiful.
Get to the point,
right?
Me.
So you've got an erection and you've got it for your body, your brain thinks you're going to have sex and release this sperm, right? So your balls they're pressured because they want to release the sperm. The girl, she doesn't end up giving you a blowy. She doesn't end up sitting on it. So you don't release the sperm.
So, sort of. The pressure isn't by the semen or the ejaculate. The pressure is because of blood. So the actual scientific terminology for blue balls is epididymal hypertension.
Use that next time.
When I'm explaining this to the girl.
When you get an erection and a sustained erection, all the blood is flowing into the penis. And as it's sustained, and so what happens is when you get an erection and you have sex or you masturbate and that, you know, erection is then gone and then you become, you know,
normal
detumescent.
Again.
So it goes soft again, right? Mm. And when it goes soft, the blood can drain out. If it's sustained erection without climax or without masturbation finishing the job, then that pressure builds up and the blood vessels can squeeze the surrounding vein so the blood can't drain out.
Shit.
And that's the pressure you feel, the congestion and engorgement of the balls.
Just say you've got engorgement of the balls.
I've got engorgement of the epidermal... What was it?
Epididymal hypertension.
Pressure.
Yeah, but it's not dangerous, anything like that. And it's often, you know, built up a lot more by dudes wanting to like guilt someone into,
really?
A lot of people do this. Oh, I've got blue balls and, you know, try to guilt someone into shagging them, basically.
Jeez. Okay. And how do you explain, I don't know if this is your field, but how do you explain post-nut clarity?
Clarity? Mm. Or hormones. It's all hormones. So when you are... When you climax and when you have this release, you get a release of prolactin, dopamine, a bunch of neurotransmitters and neurochemicals, which make you feel comfortable and at bliss and make you feel sleepy and tired. And part of that might give you some this clarity or peace.
Mm.
And it's that feeling which people talk about post-nut clarity.
So if none of you know what post-nut clarity is, the girls, for instance, you might not know.
The girls not get it?
Girls don't really understand. Girls don't get this. I'm telling you this because just they don't.
Women can have multiple orgasms because their area, the brain in women after an orgasm is still receptive to stimulation. So they can have multiple orgasms. Right. Men, they almost become desensitized to it after one climax. So actually there's a refractory period where, you know, a man has to refuel before the next climax.
Because if you like touch a penis, if the girl touches my penis, right, after I've climaxed, very, very, it's not nice, it's sensitive, horrible. Isn't that right, Jack? Yeah. Right? That's right, sure, isn't it? Yeah. So post-nut clarity, by the way, for any girls listening that you don't know, is sometimes you'll be really horny and you'll be thinking, oh, yeah. How do you explain it?
Well, what it is in an essence is after you finish the deed, you start to, you're like, oh, I'm so dirty. I'm like disgusted. No.
Okay, let me explain it.
Okay,
you're right. Explaining. Say you're on a one night stand,
right?
And you're not really feeling the person you're with. This, right? If you're with a man or a woman, right? You're not feeling them too greatly, but you're really horny. So you want to have sex with them, yeah? After you nut, your brain changes like tenfold, and you're like, why the fuck did I just do that? Get out.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Isn't it, Karen?
It's you can blame this clarity or increased cognition or whatever perspective you've got on life on your brain being completely overwhelmed by neurotransmitters. Because that point of climax just lights up your brain and you think differently after that.
Just blame it all on your dick then.
Yeah.
Basically.
I know this is random, but I said this on another podcast and everyone was saying it's not true. Apparently, your eyes have this protein in them. And if your immune system figures out that the eyes are there, they'd make you go blind.
So what you're referring to there is called immune privilege.
That's it.
And there are various sites in our body that have immune privilege, the eyes and the testicles, for example.
No way.
Because those are places where you don't want the immune system too active.
Mm.
Because what the immune system does is causes inflammation to get rid of the problem. Like it causes fires to get rid of the problem. Like when you have a cold, you get a temperature. Your body raises the heat to kill off and fry off the bacteria and viruses, right?
Man, yeah.
So if your eyes, if you got like a little scratch in your eye, for example, and the immune system in your eye was as active as it was on your skin, you could go blind because the immune system gets so inflamed, it could destroy the retina, the eye. Mm. So it needs a balance between being a little bit active, but not overactive. Mm. So that's what they mean. Like your eye won't go blind just because it recognizes you. It does recognize you, but it's just like a medium heat. You know, it's like a Nando's lemon and herb in your eyes versus the full X.
This is extra
in your skin.
Hot.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Really?
That's interesting.
It's very, very
I don't get though. How does the body just come up with that?
Yeah.
Like how we came from these little
trial and error. All the people that are dead right now, all the, you know, monkeys and ancestors of us who are dead right now, they didn't have what it took evolutionarily to survive.
But then surely some of them must have had it to then evolve. And
Yeah. The ones who had those good stuff, which allowed them to survive, them to reproduce, the best genes survived. And then we are the result of that.
Yeah, that's evolution. Mad.
So why has our body not trial and errored cancer yet?
Yeah, what
or
the
dementia?
Fuck is with that?
So if you look at some animals, like you know those axolotls, those little never kind of lizard type things.
Oh, they're like salamanders.
Yeah, they're salamander type thing. If you chop off one of their limbs, in a few weeks they'll regrow their limb.
That's sick. Yeah.
Right? But also,
like a squid or an octopus do that.
Yeah, and they can live forever. But there's also downsides to your immune system. You know, our immune system isn't great at picking up cancer. But then if it were, you know, there's always a balance between how can we beat cancer versus how do we make sure our immune system doesn't go overboard? So like, for example, elephants, right? They've got 50 copies of a certain type of tumor cancer suppression gene, P53. We've only got, I think, one or two.
What?
So elephants rarely get cancer, if at all.
Okay, so why can't we take it out of an elephant and put it in us?
People are looking at how to do stuff like that.
Mate.
There you go.
Come on.
Jax.
I should have done that.
He should be in your job.
What if we pull out some blood of an octopus, insert the blood of an octopus in us, share the DNA?
They just have ink.
Well, no, they've got blood.
There's a whole field of genetic engineering and genetic splicing and DNA editing that's going on to figure out how to beat HIV, how to beat cancer, how to beat different forms
so
of things.
So we've already put octopus blood in us?
No, I can't say that. I don't know. Maybe somewhere crazy someone's done that.
Have you seen recently in the news that the first male has had the chip implant in their head?
The Neuralink. Is that
right?
Yeah.
His name, I can't remember. But what do you think of that? Because he said that he's paralyzed. But now this little Neuralink, he can like make chessboards move on a screen.
Right, yes, nuts.
So Neuralink, I think, could be revolutionary for those instances where people are paralyzed and locked-in syndrome. Locked-in syndrome is one of the scariest conditions you can ever have. Okay. It's where you are awake inside, but you cannot communicate. And there was an incredible book. I'm struggling to remember the name. I think it's The Butterfly and the Diving Bell.
It may save your life.
That's a good book. I think it's called The Butterfly and the Diving Bell or something like that.
Okay.
Where it's a memoir of a guy who had locked-in syndrome and doctors thought he was basically unconscious or like a vegetable. Mm. And then he eventually communicated with his eyes and blinking and stuff. And then people figured out, wait, this guy's actually not just in a coma or, you know, paralyzed or whatever. He's awake. He's locked in. And people figured out locked-in syndrome is a real thing. So for stuff like that, a Neuralink would be great. But imagine if everyone had a Neuralink and it got
hacked.
We'd
be OP, yeah.
Oh, yeah. We'd NPCs, mate.
What did you say?
Yeah.
We'd be OP, wouldn't we?
Political parties buying people's Neuralink.
Oh, mate.
People
selling
their brains for, like, food.
Bro, imagine we got hacked. That's mad.
Well, that leads me on to this as well, is I saw this, I don't know if it's true, but like you were saying, the locked in thing, this guy, I think it is true actually, it was a documentary on it where, I wonder if you've heard of it, he's laying down, he's in this coma sort of state, like you were saying, and he heard all his family and his mum was like, oh, I wish you would die. She said that to him. And then he'd come out of it, and like in like years or whatever. And then he said to her, oh, I heard you say you wished I would die. But obviously she meant it because he was like paralyzed. And I think my mum would say the same to me. If I was like paralyzed on a table, like being, you know, whatever, she would say to me, I'll just die.
Yeah, but there's a nicer way of saying it.
Yeah, I know.
I wish you would die is a bit deep.
You know, that's interesting because, you know, a lot of the times when nurses and doctors tell families whose relatives are dying, oh, go and speak to them, there's some truth and into why that works because hearing is one of the last senses to go. Mm. So while they might not be able to respond to you, the auditory inputs and you speaking to them will still be registered in their brain. So it could be comforting or horrible.
So when you're in like a coma, are you just like dreaming all the time?
The truth is, you wouldn't really know. Difficult to study that on a neuroscientific level. You can put EEGs, like little brain electrodes and like, you know, brain instruments to record the electrical activity. Mm. And yeah, sometimes it looks like a dreamlike state. Sometimes it just looks like random noise. And this is the weirdest experiment, right, that was accidentally done. Someone who's having an EEG, so their brain electrical activity recorded, suddenly had a heart attack and then he went into a cardiac arrest. And then while he was dead, if you have a cardiac arrest, your heart has stopped and you're dead, basically. Mm. He was dead and the brain recording was still going on. Like the guys didn't take it off.
Wow. Oh my God.
So they recorded his brain activity after death and it was still going on for another 2 minutes. And they found the patterns of brain electrical activity was the same as when you're dreaming. And it was happening really fast. So basically, the suggestion was, when you die, your life literally does flash before your eyes because it was going through all the memories.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I've heard that as well.
That's
sick.
I want to try that.
Well,
that's so cool.
But that brings me on to your book, Karen.
It does.
So what you've got a book here, which is this book may say...
You've kindly given us both a copy.
Signed. Little cheat.
Signed?
Yeah.
Is it?
Yeah, yeah. Where? A few pages in.
If you pay, we have to find it. It's like a little word.
TikTok's a little... favorite doctor. How long did this take?
Oh, this one's Dear Jack.
that one's yours.
You got the wrong names.
Yeah, you got the fucking...
So how long did it take you to write this?
I was 2.5 years.
Jesus.
Dear Cole, I hope this book can tickle all your funny bones. Is that what you've written in that one?
No.
Oh, you didn't. Okay. Funny joke.
Jack, I hope you get funnier. You're a prick. I hope this book provides plenty of laughs as well as learning. Oh, very good. So what is this book about?
This book is basically a combination of my anecdotes throughout medical school, being a doctor, being a surgeon, debunking medical myths, health hacks that you can actually do every day to improve your sleep, your brain health, your gut health, everything, all scientifically evidence-based, cutting out all the bullshit. And it should be a fun read as well.
Are you allowed to do all this? Like, are you? Do you still work as a doctor?
Yeah, yeah, right? Yeah.
And they're all right with you putting like shit in there?
Yeah, yeah. As long as there's nothing which, quote unquote, from the GMC brings the profession into disrepute. Right? So if I'm caught out drinking and then I'm promoting like Stella Artois or something, that would probably bring my profession into disrepute.
So that competes with your TikTok, because if you get a brand deal for like a Stella Artois, you can't do it.
It's a grey area, but I probably wouldn't. You know? I mean, I definitely wouldn't do something like that. Yeah,
and vaping.
Oh no!
Oh, I want to get onto that.
Yeah, is your book on other? You can sell this on Shopify, probably. Have you put it on Shopify?
I haven't thought about that, but I'd want to sell it everywhere possible.
Yeah, there we go.
Well, that brings us nicely, very nicely, into what you should do, which is go on Shopify, right?
And sell your book on Shopify.
Why?
I mean, that boy's a bestseller. So if he did, he would have been hearing a lot of this. Cha-ching!
Karen, this book may save your life. It is titled... You know what saved my life, Jack?
What's that?
Shopify.
Why is that?
Because I... see, I'm getting teary. It saved me loads of money by buying...
It did. And that's Shopify, the all-in-one e-commerce platform. So Shopify is revolutionizing millions of businesses worldwide and helping people like Curran earn all the money he needs.
If he wants to go and sell it on there. Shopify simplifies selling in person and online and even gets you selling across social media marketplaces.
You have complete control over your business and brand without learning new skills in design or coding.
It's time... to get serious about selling at Shopify today.
Sign up for a £1 per month trial period at shopify.co.uk/lowIQ, all lowercase.
You got that, Karen?
I got it.
It's go to shopify.co.uk/lowIQ to take your business to the next level.
So I wanted to get on. So we talk, by the way, get the book. Where can they buy? This is a number one bestseller.
Number one Sunday Times bestseller. I was blown over by that. Completely.
That's amazing. Yeah, well done. Amazing. Congratulations. Where can they actually get it?
Amazon, any bookstores, basically. Anywhere you buy books, including Amazon.
Shopify.
Waterstones, WH Smith, you can buy it. Yeah.
Mm. Amazing. So yeah, get your hands on a copy. We'll put links in the bio and all that stuff so you can find it. But anyway, before we go on to the book, you mentioned vaping. Now.
No, I mentioned vaping.
Did you? Someone mentioned vaping. Now, there's a big stigmatism around vaping.
That's not the right word.
Is it? Stigma. Yeah. Around vaping. Now, a lot of people say vaping is better for you than smoking. What's the realities of this?
I think the misnomer comes there to say that something like vaping is better than smoking, because it's like saying getting slapped in the face is better than being kicked in the balls. Mm. I don't want either.
I'd say it is a bit better than getting kicked in the
balls. Yeah, but better is the wrong word to use.
It's still not good
for you. And there is increasing evidence coming out about vaping, because vaping is relatively new compared to smoking. We know smoking is terrible with all the cancers, heart disease, chronic lung conditions it can cause. Mm. Secondhand smoking as well. We don't know about the harms of secondhand vaping when someone is just blowing a cloud of strawberry mint into your face. Mm. We don't know about that. We know there's more evidence about vaping affecting the egg quality in women's.
Egg.
Yeah, there's a reproductive effect of vaping, you know, the oocytes and the eggs in women, sperm quality potentially, and increasing the rates of various other conditions as well. We are getting more evidence about it, and it's not looking good. Mm. Not looking good, bro.
So they're banning it now, aren't they? Or is that not happening anymore?
Rishi is trying.
I think they're trying to reduce it looking so kind of juicy for kids. You know, the kind of bright advertising and the colours. Because it's like, hey, come have this candy that's going to potentially harm your lungs and everything else.
Yes.
Why are you branding it like it's some sugary snack?
Have you ever vaped?
No.
Do they vape in India?
Probably.
Do you reckon?
I reckon
they smoke a lot there, don't they?
They smoke a lot of all sorts happens everywhere, yeah.
Weed?
Weed, yeah. There's, really? It's in there's a drink called bhang, which is a concoction of milk, a lot of other sweet things, and marijuana. And it's drunk during holy occasions and weddings sometimes, just to get high.
Really?
Getting high for the occasion.
Oh, yeah. So marijuana is linked with Hindu culture and mythology for years.
Does weed have negative effects?
Paranoia. So there's,
other than the mental.
So in kind of cannabis, you've got THC, tetrahydrocannabinol, and CBD, cannabidiol. Mm. CBD is increasingly researched for its positive effects on mood because in our body, we've got cannabinoid receptors in our brain and everywhere else, which could actually have positive effects on improving pain, improving sleep, addiction, all sorts of things. But the THC is the addictive, problematic thing potentially. So there's a growing body of research looking at CBD for medicinal use. So potentially, yeah, I think in the future it will be prescribed more widely and mainstream for a lot of things we struggle to treat now.
You mentioned you were looking into LSD, right?
Did,
yeah. And you said you would maybe take it.
There's a lot of taboo about LSD.
He wouldn't take it then, is what I'm trying to say. He's just looked into it.
What if it's like a... No.
Hypothetically.
No, no. What if it's like a... For their research and stuff. It's all legal.
If there was an opportunity to be part of an LSD trial, scientifically, I would happily, sign up to be in that trial. And if it was medicalized and legalized for medicinal or even personal use, I would take it. Because if you look at the body of research of LSD and hallucinogens and psychedelics, in the 1950s and 60s, there was a shit ton of research being done. And then 50 years, there was just nothing. Because the American government was like, no, we're not having it. It was all because of the Vietnam War. There was an anti-war sentiment because a lot of the protesters were taking psychedelics and doing all of that. And it all got bundled into one. And, we're not going to do research anymore. But now they're researching it for PTSD, mental health, depression. And it's actually showing to have incredible effects.
Really?
So I think in the next, I hope, decade or so, we'll start to see more and more LSD being legalized for medicinal use.
So what is LSD? Is it like a chemical compound?
Like psilocybin. It's a chemical compound. You find it in magic mushrooms as well. And I was speaking to a pharmacology expert who's done decades of research on LSD. And he was talking to me about the stoned ape theory. Have you heard about the stoned ape theory?
Where they find drugs and eat them.
Well, our ancestors, the Homo sapien ancestors and Homo erectus, they were eating anything, and including magic mushrooms, which are just growing there. Some of the mushrooms probably killed them because they didn't know what was what. Some of these mushrooms, the magic mushrooms, probably made them feel, oh, hang on, that is actually quite nice. And that developed our art and culture and all these other great things in human history.
That's sick.
And that boosted the serotonin receptors and basically helped us evolve culturally as a species. That's the stoned ape theory.
Theory, though, I suppose, isn't it?
Well, you can't really know, can you? You can't ask an ape if he got stoned.
It definitely would have happened.
Can I tell you my theory?
Yeah.
I believe genuinely that, in our history, we've got all these stories where people would be seeing stuff, right? These like mythical creatures and all that.
Yeah.
I think everyone was just high as a kite, right?
I agree.
It was a popular thing in ancient Greek and Roman culture to get stoned if you were like kind of high level society, just to get wasted and stoned on various things and herbs and ergot, kind of fungus, which would make you high. It was very common to do all of that. And you know the Salem witch trials?
No.
Where there's like in New England in America, and sort of after I think 16th, 17th century, where all these women got burnt at the stake because they were thought to be witches.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of that happened because they were using, or they accidentally ingested the crops, which was poisoned with ergot, with a fungus, and they started having like deliriums and hallucinations and psychosis. So they're actually unwell and they were burnt because of this, and they were thought to be witches.
So they weren't actually, they were just high.
They weren't witches, were they? They're not real.
They were high. They were saying things and doing things because they were high, and they were just burnt because, you're witches.
What is the maddest story, right, you've got, embarrassing or just insane, that's happened in the doctor's room?
Ooh, there's something which happened relatively recently, actually.
Oh, okay.
In the last 2 years.
Yeah.
At this point, already, I've already been on social media and I've got, you know, a number of people following me, etc. I was lumped. I drew the short straw and I was given the task of doing the Friday afternoon hemorrhoid banding clinic.
Hemorrhoid banding?
Yes. People come in with hemorrhoids and I basically shove this bum gun inside their asshole. Hmm. And fire a high-speed rubber band to tie around the hemorrhoids.
What?
You know, the hemorrhoids are piles. The rubber band goes around it, cuts off the blood supply, and after a couple of days, the hemorrhoid falls off, and yeah, boom, you're done. You don't got hemorrhoids anymore.
That's great.
I had that task. I had to use this gun, like about for 10 patients or so. This one woman comes in her 30s, sits down, have a chat to her. Before I do the bum gum thing on her, I have to examine her, obviously. Examine her bottom, see where the hemorrhoids are. Normally, when you have to examine someone from the sort of their bottom, you get them to lie in this fetal position, you know, with their knees tucked up to their chest and they lie on one side.
Okay, oh no.
She just got on all fours.
Oh, she expected sort of you were going to... Yeah.
And then I was like, I tried to like tell her to go and this and that, and she wasn't having it. And she just stood there like that. She was like, I think this is more comfortable for me.
Of course it is.
And then I put my finger inside.
Sure.
Her bottom.
Yeah. Is it your finger? Is it?
Yeah. Put my finger inside her bottom. And then this is the last thing you want to hear when you're, you know, two knuckles deep inside someone, where she turned around. Rule number one, you don't look and don't make eye contact when you're examining a patient or when you're being examined. Don't do that. Why did you do that? She turned around and looked at me and be like, I follow you on Instagram.
No.
Oh my God. Well, whilst you're deep in her ass.
Yeah, I was examining it and I was like, what did you swirling around? And then I was like, thank you. Rule number two of Rectal Examination Club, don't say thank you. Either when you're doing it or when you're receiving
thank
it.
Thank you.
Yes.
Yeah. And then I kind of fired the bum gun and then I had to, you know, like sit her down and be like, I've done this. Make sure you like, subscribe and follow.
She must have known that she followed you before she went in.
Yeah, you were wearing her like a glove.
Yeah.
I know, but I don't know why she chose that moment to say it.
That's what I'm saying. Surely she'd just say it before.
Yeah, you'd just be like,
Because surely that is a hard part of you doing TikTok and being a doctor and probing.
I'm getting more patients recognize me before their surgery. So now
now they're buzzing for their surgery, mate.
Well, imagine now I get like a complication from surgery and someone goes online to try and cancel me.
Oh, yeah.
You're fucked then.
This is why I am never going to do private surgery now. Because I've really reached this level where a number of people follow me. Yeah. Imagine if like, any surgeon, no matter how good you are, you will have complications.
Yeah.
If you do enough surgery, you'll have some, whether it's a skin infection or whatever, or pain, you'll have complications. Say in a year of doing private surgery in the future, if I have three patients who all have the same complication, and it's perfectly normal and reasonable to have that, if they all band together and be like, he's a rotter, that guy.
Mm.
You know,
he's he gave me AIDS.
So I'm scared from that side. What?
Don't know. Carry on, move on. Sorry, no one really heard.
So I'm not going to do private surgery because I'm like a little bit worried about all of that. But also like I like it in a way that patients recognize me and feel confident enough to be like, you know, I love your stuff and, you know, in the day-to-day interaction to say that. But it's a little bit disconcerting. Like, oh shit, I'm being watched now. Every movement.
I mean, it made you more, wary of...
Yeah.
Of people.
In when there's complications with a surgery and people, you know, pass away, who's the person that has to, like, tell the family and stuff?
Me.
You have to do that?
Yeah, it's
that
called duty of candor. If you fuck up during surgery, if you do something unintended, the patient dies, or if any patient dies, even if it's not because of surgery, that's one of the worst bits of my job.
Mm.
Telling patients that they're going to die or they've got a cancer or telling family members their patients or their relatives have died. And you can't, 2 years ago, about 3 years ago now, young woman comes in with pancreatitis. She's got an inflammation of her pancreas. We're trying to figure out the cause, so we get her down to the ultrasound department for an ultrasound to see if she's got gallstones. That's a common cause of pancreatitis. As she's going down to the ultrasound department, she has a cardiac arrest. She's in her early 20s.
Whoa.
Fit and well. She has a cardiac arrest. We don't know why. We're doing CPR. Her ribs are cracking as well, because that's you have to crack ribs. And next thing you know, she's in the intensive care unit. And 24 hours later, she's passed away. And I've got to tell the mother and father, and I'm getting goosebumps now thinking about this, actually. As soon as I told the mother, she drops to the floor. Oh. And that scream I heard, I'm actually getting cold thinking about it. It was like a feral scream.
Did she blame you?
No. But she was just so shocked. She thought it was just going to be like an update about what's going on with her daughter. Why is she in the intensive care unit? But she to tell her that she's dead. Like, you know, a parent finding out that their young child is dead.
And what did she go in for initially, sorry?
Just like abdominal pain and pancreatitis.
Oh my goodness.
I wouldn't even know where to start with explaining something like that. Like, how do you even begin that?
You're taught in medical school how to break bad news. Like, you ask the patient what do they know at the moment about what's going on with the patient or them their own condition. And then you slowly, like, mentally signpost it and lead into the conversation. But that is all a pile of rubbish. You learn it on the job. And sometimes you're rubbish at doing it. And your manners suck. And you eventually get better over time. So probably the patients who I was telling they had cancer and their relatives had died when I was a first year doctor, probably I was terrible at it. Mm. And I probably gave them like trauma from how I probably said it. Mm. And now I've learned how to say it in like the nicest way, so I'm like a support mechanism for them. Yeah. They can be like, okay, at least let me ask you questions.
So surely as well, like, you may learn a certain way, but everyone's reaction is going to be different, right?
Yeah, some are angry, some are actually blame you.
That's what I'm saying.
Some will blame you. 100%. There was once actually in the hospital where a patient had passed away and they had about 20 family members in the hospital. No one did anything wrong. Like, the medical team were not at fault. They were just really unwell, right? Yeah. And it was like the kind of the head of the family. And they destroyed the toilets. They threw shit on all of the toilets everywhere. They vandalized the Costa Coffee downstairs. They completely trashed the corridors and stole stuff from the wards as well. I mean, this is a rare exception. This doesn't happen with all families. I was asked to speak to them and I heard about all of this and I was genuinely scared. And basically they came up to me and says, we don't want to speak to you. We want to speak to your boss. And I was like, okay, no problem at all. I got my boss in. I was like, they want to speak to you.
Yeah.
And he was very close to being assaulted.
Jesus.
Yeah.
I'm surprised he didn't punch him up. That's mental.
What is the method? Because how would you do that?
How would I do it to you?
I'd be like, things like that, I'd shut down, I think. If there's 20 people there and I have to break bad news, I don't think I could do that.
It's nerve-wracking. The UK is nothing. I've got friends who work here who have like worked in India or Pakistan. Mm. One of the guys who worked in Pakistan that I worked with, he basically was working in the emergency room. Someone came in with a gunshot wound to their abdomen, bleeding out. And the relative has also got a gun and says, if he dies, you die.
Fuck that.
And sometimes the doctors in India, Pakistan, and other, you know, sometimes African countries as well, are beaten by patients. If they don't like the treatment, if the patient dies, has a complication, they are beaten. That doesn't
happen
here. That's
mental, isn't it? Because you're trying to help people and they're beating you. I'd literally just be like, do it yourself, mate, then. Just fuck off. there's no way, mate. There's no way. But in like India, do they handle death better because they're more spiritual and they're more at peace and they're lovely? And
I don't know because I've never worked in India. My mum has. And I think there's a number of reasons. Maybe spirituality has something to do with it and being at peace and less taboo-ness about death.
Yeah.
But also just the volume of people dying on a daily basis and the volume of people being born. Mm-hmm. It sounds bad, but I think it's almost expected because the life expectancy is lower in India, mortality is higher. So when the death occurs, because of the lack of advanced healthcare in most places in India compared to the Western world, it's less of a shock almost.
Mm. You know? That's really interesting. That's really interesting.
Talking about death, what is your views on after death? What do you think happens?
Because I know a lot of people, right, where they've been doctors or whatever, and they've got ghost stories within hospital. Now, have you experienced any of these, being a doctor around death all the time?
One sort of experience, well, I don't know if it's a ghost story or a coincidence. It was it always happens on a night shift. These kind of weird happenings happen on a night shift. I was like a first year doctor and I was asked to go and see a patient. Now, that patient was about to die. Like, they were expected to, you know, kind of be about to die. Like, they were being palliated. So all the treatments had failed. They were really old and unwell. And the family were like, do you know what? Just keep them comfortable.
It was like end of life.
End of life, yeah. Mm. So they were being kept comfortable with, like, morphine and, you know, anti-sickness agents, whatever. And there was this, but she was, this woman was still like alert to the sense of could talk a little bit and stuff. Mm. And she said to me, oh, the person in the next room's about to die. What? And I hadn't been flagged about the person in the next room, about them being unwell or anything. Like, they were actually about to be discharged soon. They're waiting for like a nursing home or something.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, like maybe, you know, sepsis or delirium, you know, all the kind of morphine and everything probably making them slightly, you know, like hallucinating and stuff. And I just attended to them and then I went away. Half an hour later, I get my emergency bleep goes off. Come to this ward, this room, this bed number. It's that one who the woman said was about to die.
Wow.
She went to do a cardiac arrest.
Wow.
Unexpectedly. What's so that? I'm like thinking, is that a coincidence, or because she was end of life, did she have some kind of like foot in both worlds kind of thing? Which is creepy.
Wow. Okay. Did you go back to the old lady? The old lady.
I did. Oh, did
you say, how the fuck did you know? Did you kill her? Did you touch her? So you didn't ask her?
I didn't ask her. No, I was too freaked out, to be honest.
That is crazy.
Didn't the woman die, or did you save her?
No, she passed away.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
Yeah.
She passed away. Rest in peace. Rest in peace.
So do you believe in that kind of stuff? Like, what? I don't even know what you'd call it. It's like psychic almost.
Because, am I right in saying, in hospitals, when a patient dies in that room, is protocol to open a window to like let the spirit out.
I didn't know that, actually.
Yeah, it is. And my girlfriend's a qualified nurse, was. And then she said, she had all these stories about ghosts and stuff. And then she said like, yeah, you have to open the window. But you don't even like talk about it. Literally, if a person dies, it's like silent, you open the window and the spirit, to let the spirit out.
That makes sense. I mean, I do believe in spirits and stuff, and I always want to find some, but I always want to find some like science behind it, because like I don't want to just be very wishy-washy and woo-woo, you know?
Yeah.
So if you think about our brain, your reality right now is just a matrix.
Yeah.
Your brain creates a hallucination of what you think is there.
Mm.
So what you're seeing right now is a fraction of a fraction of reality. Because your brain and your eyes can only perceive a certain wavelength. Your ears can only like hear between 20 hertz and 20,000 hertz. Mm. Above and below that, you can't hear. For example, elephants can actually hear clouds. We can't hear it.
Hear clouds?
That's mad. Yeah. And bees can see like mental
ultraviolet.
Colors. Yeah.
We can't see all that. So actually, we're seeing a tiny percentage of reality.
Mm.
So what if these spirits and ghosts are actually in other frequencies in visual spectrum and in the auditory spectrum that we just can't perceive?
100%. Yeah.
Maybe.
Plus, people say dogs can see
ghosts, yeah.
Yeah, because they also have different vision and different hearing, and they can hear better than us on a higher frequency. So, you know, plants, when you cut them, they scream.
Yeah.
In ultrasonic frequency.
Well, I said we said that in the last
podcast. Yeah, we did. Yeah, we did.
If you hook up like electrical transducers to fungi, they produce noise and music. They talk to each other.
That's mental, yeah.
So what are we missing out on?
I've been seeing, these have been going viral recently. They attach these clips to plants, and it actually, they're going, woo, doo, doo.
Yeah. Well, it's
ultrasonic
said,
frequencies.
No, but you can hear what they're singing about. Yeah.
Wow. And dolphins do that.
Do they? Oh, mate. So are you religious?
So I was brought up as a Hindu.
Right.
Although, like, I would say over the years I've drifted away from it, but I like the culture and mythology aspect of it. And there's a few aspects of it I like. Like, I believe in reincarnation.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Like, when you die, all of the deeds, good and bad, that you've done throughout your life,
mm-hmm.
it will be weighed up and determine in some extent of what you will be in your next life.
Right.
Okay. Like, if you've been a criminal and an absolute douchebag in this life, you might end up as something terrible in your next life.
Do you come back as like different animals?
A cockroach, maybe.
Really?
Maybe.
You're gonna be fucked.
I reckon I'll be like an eagle or something.
I would prefer to be an eagle. I would love that, because I'm not prefer to a human, but in my next life,
yeah,
jumping off of cliffs.
Yeah.
Right. I'm a predator.
We know.
No, right. I'm an apex predator as an eagle. Yeah. and I'm soaring through the sky. I'm looking down on all these rats, and I'll eat one.
Yeah.
And I can just go back up and fish with my claws and eat it. Raw fish.
Would you prefer to be like a wealthy billionaire?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know.
Well, actually, no, tax reasons. Eagles don't have tax.
A lot of billionaires are very unhappy. I want to come back as a very happy... I want to come back as like... who's well happy?
Gandhi.
No, he wasn't that happy. He was famously not happy with what was going on.
Oh, I reckon like if you're like a NBA player, they're pretty happy.
Yeah, but not all of them. They're big, they're tall. That's probably why they're a bit happy.
They're tall, they're good looking, they've got a lot of money and they're famous.
Yeah, but the training every day, I kind of want to be a monk.
Monk?
Yeah, but they have to manifest to be happy. They're wasting all their lives just doing
this. If you invented like an amazing app, like if you were...
Facebook.
Yeah.
Mark Zuckerberg.
Is he happy? I don't know.
He's a robot.
He doesn't look that.
But imagine you made an app and you sold it off to like Google for like $1 billion.
Mm.
And then you're young and you're rich.
That's true.
You could do whatever.
Yeah, but the thing is, that's your next life. But this life, we have the opportunity to do that.
That is true.
Right? So your next life, you want to do something else.
We'll make the cock robot app. Become a billionaire.
Yeah.
Robocock.
Let's do that.
I was going to... This is very relevant as well to the current times.
Yeah.
So I used to, before I did TikTok and stuff, I used to run a marketing agency. And one of my clients was, it was like self-hypnosis type stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And recently, last week, was it?
Yep.
Cole went to a hypnotist.
Okay. Yeah.
And, explain the experience. Just to preface this, I've always said, like... I don't think if someone got me on stage, I could be hypnotized. But Carl, you take the floor.
I'll take the floor. He's never said that ever. Before,
that's a saying, isn't it?
Take the floor. What? Just take the floor. Extractor. So, Jesus. So I went to this hypnotist, right? It's amazing. I'm skeptical as well. Like you seem to think I'm not.
No,
but,
I think.
But I am skeptical to some extent, right? This man was doing all this stuff on stage. And he was doing a few magic tricks to warm the crowd up. And I was thinking, right, get to the proper brainy shit. Anyway, so he starts saying, oh, people come up from the audience. And I was thinking, who's with this guy? Anyway, he gets random people up. And they're all, you could tell they're random people because they're like, these people are like grim. No, but there's some blokes that are drunk yelling like swear words and shit. That's what I mean by grim, right? So they got some of them people up and I actually went up as well. So I sat down and there was a line of us and he got me up as well. And then, and he said, right, Cole, I'm going to make you read this man's mind. Okay. This man got up and he tells me to close my eyes and ears and shit. And this man writes down a place in the world, any place on this board in anywhere in the world. Right. And then this guy, hypnotist, goes to me and goes like this or whatever. And then he goes, all right, you might be able to hear a certain place or something. This hypnotist, by the way, doesn't know what's on this board as well. Mm. He turns the board around, right, writes on it. And then he goes, right, you're going to hear some words and stuff like that. And I'm hearing Rome, 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 right? I'm hearing it in a girl's voice. And then he goes, all right, Cole, did you hear anything? And I'm like, yeah. And I say, Rome, turns it around. It's Rome on there. Right?
What?
Which is mad.
That's mad, isn't it?
Yeah. And then I was like, fucking hell, I was thinking, how the fuck could he possibly, did he have like some sort of speaker? But I was going like this.
Yeah.
So he couldn't have.
But surely, like your girlfriend was there, she would have said he was saying Rome in your ear.
Well, exactly, yeah. Right. And then he got her up, yeah. And this is the mental part where I was like, right, this is definitely real. I don't know how you explain this, but it's definitely real. He was going to these people that lined up. I didn't partake in this part, but he said that I would be better watching the audience because he didn't feel like I was like open to it because I was a bit like, oh, there's people watching and stuff like that. So he got people that he picked people and my girlfriend was one of them. He was going all this. He was like, watch my hand. Okay, look at me, listen to my voice. And he's doing all this shit. It was going like this. And then he pulled him and he goes, sleep, right? One by one, they're looking at each other. One of them goes, and I'm like, what the fuck? Goes along the line, does it to every single one of them. Girlfriend, sleeps.
What?
This. And I'm like, I was literally freaked. I was like, what the fuck are you doing to her? Like, what
did
is
you
going
ask
on?
Her at the end whether she genuinely felt
she
asleep?
Was 100%. I said, what did you feel? And she was like, I just felt really tired. And then it felt like I was out for like 30 seconds, but it'd been like, she was out for like 8 minutes. He was doing
She felt it was 8 minutes.
She felt it was like 30 seconds, but it was like 6 minutes, I'd say, that she was literally like this for.
Oh my
and God. Then the guy was like, okay, to everyone, there was about five people up there. He was like, okay, guys, okay, you're on a beach and you're rubbing suntan lotion in your hands. Put your hands, you're going to put suntan lotion. They always are like this, right? And then he goes like this and he touches them and he's like, rub the suntan lotion on you. And they're like this and they're rubbing it on like this. And then he's like, there's bees around you, but there's bees all around you. And they're going like this.
Wow.
And I was thinking, what the fuck is going, this guy's a witch.
Jeez.
How'd you explain that?
Oh my God.
Mm. Explain it, Karen.
I'm actually open to the science of hypnosis. I think it's a legit thing.
Mm. It must be.
But again, like you said, he didn't choose you because you weren't open to it and easily influenced potentially.
Yeah.
So I think you've got to be open to that.
Because some people snapped out of it like midway through. Some people, like Crystal, she snapped out as well. And then he was like, okay, you tried to snap her back in. And some people he did. He went sleep. He did that thing again. Sleep. Some people went back down. And she couldn't. So he was like, okay, sit back in the audience.
But it's a form of meditation almost. Yeah. Like when you're meditating, you're basically hypnotizing yourself.
Mm.
Right? So this guy he's obviously a showman. As well as like an expert in understanding psychology as well. Like Darren Brown.
Yeah.
He does that in the whole audience sometimes.
I was there as well. I got hypnotized by him.
By him, yeah. So there you go. Like he's like a master. He's like kind of David Blaine. All of these guys, I don't think it's very easy to do that to that level. Yeah. That's why there's so few of them that we see, right?
Yeah.
But I think it's legit.
Well, so this person I used to work with was the son of this self-hypnosis guy. He was a doctor.
Oh, yeah.
But he started using hypnosis as this alternative thing. And he treated many, many people. This wasn't in the practice. This was, you know, privately. And he did things like getting rid of phobias, helping people quit smoking, all kinds of different things.
Yeah.
And he's got like, he made these, or this was a long time ago, but obviously the son and stuff do it now. But he has all these audio books, which you just listen to and they go into like your subconscious brain. And
well, there's a lot of evidence looking at like white noise, pink noise, and all these different frequencies, binaural beats. And there's certain frequencies can align with your brainwave patterns and either make you hallucinate, make you feel chilled out, improve your level and depth of sleep. Mm-hmm. So there is, and that may all be part of the hypnosis. Mm. You know what the weirdest thing is? There was an episode on hypnosis on, I think, Grey's Anatomy or Scrubs, you know, the TV show, and where a patient on the TV show asked to be hypnotized instead of having an anesthetic to have their appendix out.
Right.
Right? Which you can't do. And I had a patient several years ago who asked me, I'm scared of an anesthetic. Can you hypnotize me instead?
Jesus.
I said, no.
I'll get Darren in one second.
Yeah.
Wow, what the hell?
Wasn't there...
That's crazy, isn't it, that?
I found out a cool fact about hypnosis the other day, but I forgot it. Okay. It was really cool as well. I'm pretty sure, like, footballers get hypnotized as well to make them, like, better.
Right.
That'd be a good move.
There was a very specific thing. I can't remember what it was.
I think that's what cult leaders do. They hypnotize... Mm. On mass level.
Well, right? Yeah. I mean, I suppose marketing is a form of manipulation and hypnosis in a way.
Yeah.
But I used to, when I was sleeping, listen to hypnosis videos.
Yeah, he did. He listened to Get Rich videos.
It was like getting rid of anxiety. Just loads of different things. I was looking it up, and obviously your subconscious brain takes in so much that your conscious brain isn't aware of.
Yeah.
And the whole thought behind it is that if, you know, whilst you're going throughout your day, I wouldn't just do this at night, but, you know, at night, your subconscious brain is very active.
Yeah, yeah.
Whilst you're sleeping and that. So I wanted, at all hours of the day, I wanted something giving me these positive affirmations or, you know, this calming, yeah. And to be fair, it helped me a lot. I don't know whether it's a placebo or what, but
that. And I've also heard, and there's some evidence that lucid dreaming, where you can control your dreams, can actually allow you to solve problems when you're sleeping.
That's mad. I'd love to lucid dream. My mate said he had a lucid dream once. This is Nick, my friend, and he said it was a weird one. He said he was in the back of a car. And he was with a girl. No, genuinely, he said this. I can't remember. It was a celebrity. It was like Jessica Alba or something. And yeah, he was having sex with her in his dream. He loved
that
it.
That is mad.
Lucid dreamers do it to have sex.
Yeah, I've never done
it. Can't you train yourself to lucid dream?
You've got to start, from what I've heard, you've got to start by keeping a journal of your dreams or whatever you can remember every day. So if you wake up, you forget the dream within like 10 to 15 minutes of waking up.
Why is that?
Because it's unnecessary information that your brain usually doesn't need. And it's happens in pretty much everyone. So people who say they don't dream, everyone dreams. They just have forgotten their dreams. But you'll probably remember it in the first thing in the morning. Whenever you wake up, write it down. Get into a habit of keep doing that. And eventually you'll remember more and more of the dream. And if you have some sort of sign to tell yourself that you're dreaming, like either trying to poke your finger through your skull.
Yeah.
If you're doing that, I'm awake right now. Like almost like in Inception where he does the little twisty of the dice.
Yeah.
If I'm doing that, and in my dream, if my finger goes through my skull, okay, I'm dreaming now.
Oh. Also, another one is apparently if you look at your hands in your dream, you don't have five fingers, and then you know you're dreaming. Also, if you ask someone in your dream, either what's the time or am I dreaming? Or look at a clock, then you know you're dreaming. And apparently, if you ask anyone in your dream, am I dreaming? They like, if in a lucid dream, they'll just won't answer it. And they'll like, it'll go really weird and it can go down a dark turn. Apparently, if you ask that in a lucid dream.
What is a dream?
It's a different dimension.
So the dream stage happens in the rapid eye movement sleep.
Yeah,
REM.
Right, REM. That's like the lighter sleep. You're more creative and you can be easily woken up. So in your lucid dream, you're actually close to being awake. Because in REM, what actually happens is, because you're dreaming, your body it paralyzes you so you don't act out your dreams.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's like a safety mechanism so you don't go and do something dodgy, even though people have killed people in their sleep, like murdered people.
Fuck.
Right? And they've been acquitted of murder as well.
That's
Does that mean release? Meaning
like, all right, you're fine, mate. You're not going to go to jail because they've proven they've had a sleep disorder and they killed someone because they have this like REM sleep disorder behavior and they're proven to be acting out their things in sleep, not just because they've gone and killed someone. There have been a couple of cases where people have been like, you know, let free after killing someone.
That's meant.
But yeah, and so your lucid dream state is just meant to be a dream state, but we don't know much about the brain. We only figured out in the last 10 years how anesthetics work. We didn't know for hundreds of years. Well, 100 years, we're giving anesthetic. And we didn't really know how it worked.
I've heard that doctors actually don't know how it works now, though.
Not fully.
Yeah.
We sort of know more now, but we still don't really know.
But what I don't get right is...
Don't really know how paracetamol works.
But what doesn't make sense is our brain... is the one trying to figure out how the brain works. Why doesn't it just know? Because it's the brain. Yeah. It's like, how do you not know how you work?
Weird.
Because that's a good question.
Like you're doing it. Why aren't you telling yourself how you're doing
it? How would it know?
It hasn't learned that information, I suppose.
It doesn't know.
How does it not know? Because it's doing it. It just doesn't make sense.
But some animals are born with an innate thing of you have to walk and eat and suck on your mum's tit. Why don't you know how your own brain works, but you know how to get milk from
that? That's, what's the word?
Innate.
Your
conditioning.
I don't mean. Word? It's, what is it?
I don't know, that's so annoying.
What are you trying to?
You know how.
Instinct. We got the same brain.
Natural instinct, whatever it is.
Yeah. Oh, that's brilliant. Anyway,
I reckon we go on to the last segment.
Okay, this is the last segment.
And let's call this quick fire round.
So this segment, guys, is called quick fire round. And Jack is going to explain.
So the way it works, I've got a bunch of different little topics. And if you would be so kind as to give us a quick rundown on these things.
Okay. Or what does it? He make us, we make a rundown of it.
We could do that as well. That'll be very quick. It'll be very quick.
Yeah.
These are things people want to know as well.
Okay.
Okay. So a big one. Skincare. Now, a lot of girls, my girlfriend in particular, puts about 20 products on her face. I imagine yours uses a lot.
No, but thanks.
No, I'm joking. But what is... Because I imagine that's damaging to the skin, right?
Yeah, if you look at all these products available right now, collagen, peptides, fatty acids, or ceramides, all of those things... they're already produced by your skin, right? That's how the manufacturers knew that we need them, because they're just already naturally produced. Mm. When you chuck on like a 12, 20 step skincare routine, you're actually damaging the skin barrier and you increase the chances of you having breakouts and flares and dry skin. Mm. Because a lot of these products are tested in isolation. Mm. They're not often tested together. Like, yeah. How do we know that that moisturizer plus that cleansing plus this plus this plus that all work together in harmony? Mm-hmm. So actually, there is a skincare routine where, okay, yeah, having cleanser, moisturizer, retinol, all that kind of stuff is proven to work. But going above and beyond and having this insane skincare setup is expensive. But actually, I think it can be damaging sometimes to your skin. And that's what a lot of my friends who are dermatologists say. They see people with breakouts because they go crazy on skincare routines.
So what is, at a base level, what should you do? Just soap and water?
With water, especially maybe more often if you're going to the gym. Mm. Change your like pillow sheets, which a lot of people don't.
You don't do that ever.
Clean your phones. Right? There's probably fecal matter on your phone and bacteria on your phone. Clean it every day. Moisturizer, and actually retinol as well can be helpful if you suffer from like dark spots and pigmentation, like increase the skin turnover. But keep it very basic.
Keep it basic.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
remember that. Keep it basic. Okay. Water. Next question. What are some of the best health tips you could give?
The easiest, lowest hanging fruit, which involves eating more fruit, is actually more fiber. So in the Western world, we probably have the average person, this is according to epidemiological data, is having somewhere between 10 and 15 grams of fiber a day, if that. Mm-hmm. You need about 30 grams of fiber a day. Mm-hmm. And if you don't have enough fiber, you're going to get bowel problems, hemorrhoids, chronic constipation, diverticular disease, which is little these sacs on your bowel wall, increase your risk of bowel cancer. Mm-hmm. If you increase your fiber intake by 10 grams a day, you lower your bowel cancer risk by 10%. That is a pretty sweet trade-off.
And what kind of foods contain fiber, like good foods?
Yeah, all sort of fruits. Highest, like commonly available fruits that have a decent punch of fiber would be like a kiwi. Mm-hmm. And if you eat the kiwi with the skin on, you get 30% extra fiber.
I love kiwi skin.
You eat kiwi?
Yeah. I eat the skin as well.
No, mate, it's nice. It's a bit sour.
And the skin has also some vitamin C as well, so you might as well.
Eat the skin. Oh. It's like an apple.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is it? Yeah, it's fairy.
Only
fairy.
Only a little bit. I quite like
it's
that.
It's a fairy.
Yeah,
it's nice. Trust me. All
right, okay. What are some of the biggest health misconceptions?
That you need to have probiotic supplements to be healthy.
Mm. Right.
That's a load of bullshit. Or that you need to be going to the toilet every single day.
Really?
Yeah.
Because I go a couple times a day.
Yeah, that's fine. Oh, okay. Healthy range is between 3 times a day. To 3 times a week. That is like a normal range.
3 times a week?
But do some people not go in a day?
Yeah, some people don't.
Yeah.
What about like two?
Girls, a lot of girls don't.
No, but that's just because she doesn't want you to know when she's pooing.
Well, every girl that I've seen is like, I poo once every 2 days or so.
Really?
Apparently. Unless they're just saying that.
So women have longer intestines than men.
Oh, wow. Lucky.
So it takes it longer for it to travel through.
Really?
So they can go, their intestinal transit time is a bit longer.
What
so
about
they can go.
7 days?
That's beyond the Goldilocks zone of pooping.
And then you'd have to take it out of a bag.
No, hopefully not. But that is technically constipation. If you're going once every 7 days, you might end up with fecal impaction, which might mean you need someone like me to pull it out
of your ass.
Yeah, manual,
otherwise you can sick it up, I've heard, can't you?
Manual evacuation, yeah.
You could sick poo up.
Or what about when, don't people, I can't remember what it's called, when you like, you shove loads of coffee up your
coffee
ass.
Coffee enemas.
Don't do that.
Yeah, tanning, perineal tanning, sunning, where you literally expose your gooch area and your balls and your a bum to the sun to get more vitamin D.
Is that good for you?
No, don't do it.
Bad for you.
Because you're exposing those areas to the sun, and that's often an area where you're not going to be putting in sunscreen or anything like that. You can increase your risk of skin cancers.
Mm.
If you get a skin cancer down there, it's less likely to be noticed, and it can go bad.
Shit.
That's why it's called the area where the sun don't shine.
There you go, in your eyes.
This is a good one, and I've been waiting for a doctor to give his views on this. So, my friend Cole over here, and I'm not saying he's stupid. I'm open to this idea, but you give us your scientific thought. Cole sometimes likes to go barefoot and walk in the ground because he gains the electrons from the ground, is it?
Well, it's sort of like grounding himself to sort of release any built up electricity and yeah, basically yeah, energy and stuff. And so, get from the earth.
Yeah, grounding is a thing where you grow, you go barefoot on the sand, grass, whatever. And I think that can be meditative and quite calming for a lot of people to feel that. A lot of people may not like the sensation of things like that on their bare feet. But yeah, grounding is like a calming, anxiety-busting, proven method to like just chill out.
Yeah,
but I wouldn't recommend barefoot walking, where people are like walking all around with a bare foot to stimulate more of the muscles. That is bollocks.
Oh yeah, no, but
no, but does, so we were talking and you were mentioning that it could have health benefits.
Yeah, I've seen this thing, this study where you touch your feet on the ground when you're when you're touching it. He was like, they monitored his like energy levels in his brain or something, right? It's not scientific, but either way, they, when, as soon as he touched the ground, they just become better.
It's definitely not scientific, yeah.
I think people do like going barefoot and just freeing themselves, freeing their feet, and just walking because it feels nice sometimes. If you're wearing your feet all day, take it off and you're walking in the grass, feels good.
Mm-hmm. There you go, next one.
Okay, now I'm going to give you some facts and you've got to explain them, all right?
All right.
So, this is crazy. Apparently, humans are bioluminescent and glow in the dark.
Yeah, it's true. We've got these lines in our body, Blatchko's lines. So, yeah, basically, we are UV. We've got the potential to be UV. If you know, under ultraviolet light, we'll be bioluminescent. That's a real thing. Yeah, and if you've seen, sometimes there's a guy on TikTok who's got these weird birthmarks in the shape of those lines, which would light up.
Whoa.
Called Blatchko's lines. It's because there's like areas of pigmentation. It's a really cool tattoo. It's like a human tattoo almost, his birthmark. But that is a real thing. We are.
But why have we evolved to do that?
Oh, we can't perceive it, you know.
Yeah.
People. And there is no reason. Evolution is not always for a purpose. It's just sometimes it's a glitch which happens.
Semen is UV, right?
I don't know.
It shows up in UV light.
Yeah. Black light.
Is that the same though, isn't it?
Similar, yeah.
Black light, semen.
Yeah.
Semen. Okay. Another little fact for you. Your bumhole has taste buds.
Sort of. That is true. You've got something called, it can taste. There's a number of things it can taste. And taste is probably a bit of a weird word to use. Mm-hmm. You've got something called the shart mechanism.
It can't be scientifically called that. Well, you go to patients, you've got the shart
mechanism. It's called the rectoanal inhibitory mechanism.
Okay, right.
Rectoanal inhibitory reflex. And it stops you basically shitting when you want to fart. So it's got these.
I don't have that in my
you know, like, you know, you might have felt, oh, there's a fart coming on, but actually,
poo.
Yeah. It's poo.
It's not working.
That mechanism, that reflex, tries to stop that happening. So it can tell the difference between a gas and a solid, but sometimes it can't tell the difference between a liquid and a gas.
Why can mine not tell the difference a lot of the time?
It might be desensitized to some degree.
You've been shoving stuff up there. That's what it is.
No, but so this is a thing which actually happens, right? And also your bum hole can taste chili, capsaicin.
Of course.
It binds to receptors all over the body. So when it's spicy up here, it's spicy down there as well.
Yeah, I get that.
Okay. Well, there's just two more. Okay. So you've actually made a video on this, but I want you to explain it. When you eat a pineapple, the pineapple eats you back.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, explain.
That sounds fucking amazing.
The enzyme bromelain in the pineapple, it can digest proteins. Mm-hmm. And obviously in your mouth, you've got proteins in the cells and the various tissues, and it begins to break that down. So you might get this kind of fuzzy sensation in your mouth. It's tingling when you're eating a pineapple. That is the pineapple, and the enzyme's actually trying to digest you. But then you eat it and then your stomach acids destroy it, so it can't.
Why does it make your sperm taste better? I've heard.
Because probably some of the compounds will make their way. Like, so everything in your body
diet
is filtered blood.
Yeah?
Sure.
Yeah, everything in your body is filtered blood. Sweat is filtered blood.
What? Well, when you sweat, that's blood.
That is filtered blood, yeah.
Where does it filter out?
From your blood vessels.
What? It's not water, just water?
No. It's filtered blood. Semen, it's filtered blood.
What?
Vagina juice, like, you know, the lubricant or whatever.
Discharge.
Like, the discharge and all these various things. Filtered blood.
I eat that all the time.
So every juice and fluid in your body, urine, it's filtered blood.
I think what you're trying to say is it's filtered blood.
That's what I'm trying to say. So the pineapple, yeah. You eat it, some of the compounds would go into the blood and some of them might end up in your ejaculate. And fun fact as well, you can use pineapple to tenderize steak and meat because it all that.
Oh, and lemon yeah. juice.
And kiwi as well.
Mm. You love your kiwis, don't you?
You do love kiwis.
Last one.
All right, last one.
To end it.
You made a video saying schools need to start later.
True.
What's the reasoning behind this? Because we have a large audience who are probably still at school.
I agree, though, at this, because school starts ridiculously
early. Well, he's got science behind it.
Okay. Biological clocks, circadian rhythm. In young adolescence and late adolescence as well, so anything from school to kind of university, college level, they actually tend to have their clocks a bit later. So they start functioning and feel more alert later in the day. Mm-hmm. So, and there have been studies shown that when you put exams later in the day and when you start school later in the day, the exam scores in functioning and attendance is a lot better across the board.
I agree. Mm. I'd agree. I'm tired and bored in the morning.
Yo, this is a starting school at 8 o'clock in the morning sometimes. That's too much.
Shit, like when I started school every day, I'd be out of it. I would, like, the first lesson, I wouldn't be functioning.
Yeah, true. I need the whole, like, half day to wake up.
Yeah, literally. Like, after, like, break time, I'd be like, all right, a bit better. But even now, I'm really not a morning person.
Me too. 11 o'clock is when school should start, and that's what some of these studies suggested, around 11 o'clock.
That's good. Yeah. I think so. Yeah, let's change that.
Yeah, that'd be well good. If you're watching schools, change your hours.
I would love to change that on a national level. That'd be good.
Oh, you should do that.
You would get so many more fans. Yeah. All the kids would love you.
Yeah, you would. Either way, thank you very much, Karen.
This might be one of our longest episodes. Jesus.
I think it is. Aaron, you guys have also said in the comments, sometimes you actually like longer episodes. Mm. So tell us if you actually do. Put that in the comments now. Tell us if you think Karen is a gorgeous man or not. Mm. And what else do you want to say as well? Do you want to say anything about
like what you've got coming up?
What you got?
What have I got coming up? Don't know, really.
Just barely...
Oh, I've got a book tour coming up, actually.
What is that? What, you just read on stage?
No. I'll be doing like a kind of like a medical education / comedy stand-up stage event.
Stand-up?
Very soon. Yeah, in May.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's sick.
Mixing, like, you know, like the Adam K. This Is Gonna Hurt?
Yeah.
Bit of like funny comedy stand-up type stuff.
Yeah.
Plus a lot of the educational stuff that's like funny and humorous. Mix that together. See if I can make that work.
That'd be sick. Yeah. Have you done any stand-up before with it?
Never.
Yeah. Oh, are you shitting it?
Sort of, because I need to prepare
that would be,
now.
Yeah.
Although, at least you'll sell out because you've got your fans there. And like Michael McIntyre or something, people say when he gets on stage, even if he says a shit joke, which I'm not saying you will, people laugh anyway because it's him.
They like him. They're following. They're his fans.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
See, it's different if you're like doing a random pub with random strangers. But if they're your fan.
I'll get you a couple of tickets.
Oh, yeah, I
love it.
Are you doing it in London?
Yeah.
Right, guys, me and Jack are also going to be at his show.
Oh, God.
So
packed.
It's going to be fucking heaving now, mate.
It's got a bar as well, the place where I'm going.
Free bar, guys. Free bar, all on Karen. All right, well, thank you very much for watching.
Thank you very much. Thank you for coming on.
Thank you for coming.
It's been
please
a great episode.
Like the video, please, if you're still awake. Sometimes they listen to when they're with us.
Oh, right.
Not because it's a boring episode. I mean, because they watch when they're asleep.
Well, that's when I listen to podcasts.
When we're at bed. But some people do it on the way to work. So pull over. Actually, just go on your phone now, even if you're driving, and like the video and comment. All right? Thank you very much. See you later,
guys. See you in the A&E after.
Yeah, you'll be... shut up. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.